Well, the original idea of public happiness, which I use in my book, comes from the early days in the United States. And it was the idea that people like to be seen, like to be noticed, and that responding to that, like, you know, is the stuff of democracy, really. Encouraging people to participate and to play their part, and, you know, give them a sense of being heard, a sense of confidence.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly in the case of Barack Obama's election, people who previously had probably never voted, and statistics, you know, have shown, and polls have shown, that people who had never voted or had never registered did actually come out in record numbers. So it probably was one of the most democratic from that point of view.
Well, certainly that's undeniable. That, you know, the way his campaign consciously went out to get new voters. One of the most significant things was that he was a black man standing for the office of president in a nation where the whole issue of, you know, white and black has been there from the very start. I mean, literally from the original Philadelphia Convention, the issue of slavery was there, alive. And, of course, blacks being associated with that. But hope really doesn't exist outside of vulnerability. If you've got everything, if you're secure, you don't have to hope. People only hope when they're vulnerable. So him standing as he did as a black man was itself a gesture of hope, which I think is why it has inspired people like nothing else in politics anywhere, I think, in recent times. Maybe not since, say, Mandela in South Africa, has a figure been so inspiring politically.
And that, I suppose, brings up the idea of spirituality or meaning to a degree, doesn't it? Because he is almost a spiritual leader in a way too, isn't he? Because he talks about those kind of intangible things like hope and, I suppose, having to believe in things. And
I think one of the pivotal moments was that speech he made after his pastor became very kind of turned sour on him in many ways. I can't remember the details of that lead up to it, but I remember there was a whole, you know, a significant breach between him and a man who obviously had a very deep impact on him. And I think the struggle that came across in that and in that speech, I think it struck people as genuine. You know, here's a man, a conscientious man. I think that's why, he appeals to so many people. And why I think also he was able to change the nature of political discourse, that, you know, the what's been going on in the States over the past 20 years around the whole sort of Christian right is not their views, but the way in which they held their views and the way in which the message they sent out was, anyone who disagrees with us is somehow unworthy, there's nothing to be debated, we are right, and those who are against us are somehow in bad faith. And therefore they went attacking, for instance, Clinton's sex life, and they, you know, instead of, you know, getting into discussing issues and ideas, the whole question of someone's personal behaviour becomes the major feature of public life.
And yet I suppose Barack Obama is still getting a certain degree of attacks from the bishop spoke out about the abortion.
One thing that strikes me in that is that I think in arguing the question of the rights of the unborn and in trying to return the tide really of abortion, I think people have to stand back and ask, how will this happen? You know, what kind of movement will make this possible? Because I think we reach the point whereby the assumption is that all those who support abortion are in bad faith. And I think that's a false assumption. They're not like the Nazis. It's just not a fair comparison. I'm not saying the bishops are comparing them to that, but that comparison is used. And therefore, you're just coming out and just purely on the attack without pointing out positive things, positive aspects, really closes down debate in a way and doesn't invite reflection.
And that, I suppose, is another thing about Obama that did stand out, was a more reflective person.
Well, I think he couldn't have got through that breach with his pastor without... if he wasn't a reflective person and couldn't be seen to reflect on the challenges that faced him. Because that must have been a very painful moment. And I think for me, certainly looking on, that was a moment which just deeply impressed me. And that speech, you know, was quite an inspiring one. And I think that's he has that capacity to inspire, that people associate with John Kennedy, for instance. And I think, again, Kennedy was a figure who was coming from outside. People forget the fact that he was a Catholic at that time was very significant and was a real issue and demonstrated America at its best. And I think, again, that's what Obama has done. I mean, you know, the idea of, and again, breaking through to the kind of the stale patterns of the media, you know, through the use of the internet, very creative use of the internet and emailing and all that whole you know, IT world. I think is it felt inspiring because it means that patterns are broken, and that's liberating for people when they see that. I think that's another part of his appeal.
And are you hopeful now? I mean, to use Obama's words very much, do you have hope for the future with him, or are you afraid that, you know, it'll just go like we've seen other inspiring figures come and go and not much changes in the end?
Well, when you say other inspiring figures come and go, you could point to Gandhi, who did, you know, bring about the independence of a country, or Mandela, who also brought about the independence of a country. I mean, inspiring figures are the figures who bring about change.